Hello and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review, and we're recording from the studio of WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is Ryan S. Walters, author of The Jazz Age President, Defending Warren G. Harding. Ryan, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Thank you so much for having me.
Warren Harding was president in the early 1920s. What are you defending him from, and why does it matter a century later?
Well, Harding's the most maligned president in American history. My prologue chapter is that title. And the reason I say that is because he has finished dead last in more presidential rankings than any other president. Now, he's come up a few notches in recent years, but he's probably the most maligned, most tarnished president we've ever had. And I don't believe it's justified when you actually do a deep dive into the record and look at what Harding actually did and what Harding actually accomplished. And I think it's important because, particularly for more conservative people, I mean, Harding's a president that conservatives should admire. It's the left who has trashed and tarnished him over the years. But interestingly, I was doing some research on this, and public opinion polls, when they polled liberals, obviously Harding's going to be ranked bad, but even conservatives in polls ranked him last or near last. And I think that's because of what they're getting in school. I think most teachers, most professors don't know much about Harding, and they just regurgitate whatever's in the textbooks without really taking the time to look deeply into his record, which is pretty impressive.
So what's the positive case for Harding? What did he accomplish as president?
And one of the things I do in the book, and you have to really do this with Harding, is you have to put him in his proper context. When he came into office, the things that were going on, we were in a very serious economic depression. Most people don't know that. We had a depression that hit in January of 1920 and lasted into 1921. It's called the Forgotten Depression. Most people don't even know it happened, but it was pretty serious coming out of World War One. But you have to go back even further than that. The country had been in 20 years of progressive reform since Theodore Roosevelt. We had gone through Wilson and all those progressive reforms, Federal Reserve, income tax, all that stuff. World War One, the flu pandemic, 1919, which I have a chapter on, which was an awful year of a lot of violence, terroristic bombings, race violence. And then, of course, the Depression hits in 1920. That was the year Harding was elected. So he had a lot to deal with. And when you look at what he accomplished, is that he revived the American economy and started what we know as the Roaring Twenties. Did a lot as far as healing the country, coming out of the problems of 1919 and World War One and all of that. Called for civil rights legislation, called for equal treatment for black Americans, pardoned political prisoners who Wilson had locked up simply because they opposed the war. His foreign policy almost gets no recognition. He did a lot in foreign policy. Formally ended World War One, withdrew our troops from the Rhineland in Germany, withdrew troops from the Caribbean, repaired our relations with Mexico and Latin America. The Washington Disarmament Conference was hailed as a big success. He was nominated twice for the Nobel Peace Prize. Most of these things people don't know because they've never stopped to look. And now I'm hoping with this book I can show people in a one-stop shop, if you will, why Harding is a much better president than he's been given credit for.
He sounds like a great president. So why don't we know these things about him?
Not very many people have taken the opportunity to do it. I'm not sure why that is. They just probably just assume he was bad and they leave it at that. Or historians are afraid of being tagged as a revisionist, which they've come to. The establishment uses that like we use conspiracy theorists today. It's something you don't want to get tagged with. I really don't care what they call me. I'm gonna dig for the truth and write the truth. But Harding was a very popular president at the time. He was the first president to ever get over 60% of the vote. He died in office in 1923, and people said his funeral procession, the people that poured out to grieve, rivaled the funeral for Lincoln when he was assassinated in 1865. So he was very popular. He had some scandals, and of course those broke after he died, and that's one of the things that's tarnished his reputation. But I defend him even from the scandals.
One of those scandals is the Teapot Dome scandal. What was that, and is there a defense?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tag him with Teapot Dome because it broke after he died. He found out about it. He was on a westward tour in 1923. He went all the way to Alaska. He was the first president to visit Alaska. He was coming back down the West Coast, had a mild heart attack in Seattle, went on down to San Francisco. They put him in a hotel room where he suffered a stroke and passed away. It's kind of hard. It's kind of unfair to criticize him because he died before he could do something with it. There were two earlier scandals that he had worked to stop. There was one in the Veterans Bureau, which he fired and confronted the man who was ahead of that in a violent manner, according to one witness. There was a scandal in the Justice Department. He confronted the guy who was in charge of that, and the guy went home and shot himself after Harding told him he was going to be arrested. And then he found out about Teapot Dome on that trip. He sat down with Herbert Hoover, who was on the trip with him on the train, and he says, what should I do about this brewing scandal? Should I publicize it and put it out there? And Hoover says, yeah, let's do that. And again, of course, he died before any of that was done. But the man who was responsible for Teapot Dome, Albert Fall, he ended up going to prison. So people were punished for what they had done. Of course, Harding's responsible for who he appoints to office, but at least he was doing something about it, unlike other presidents who cover it up and things like that.
Brian, wasn't Harding a philanderer who had a child out of wedlock, and does that matter?
And that, again, that's a black mark against him. He had at least two extramarital affairs. His marriage to his wife, the First Lady Florence, was really more of a partnership, I think, than a loving marriage, but which I don't really get a lot into because we don't know what went on between a man and his wife. But they had no children together. She had one from an earlier marriage. And Harding did have a relationship with a young lady named Nan Britton. We know now through DNA that they did produce a daughter. But, of course, the libel and the slander against Harding is that he was carrying on all this in the White House, that he had turned the White House into this party house, and they had all these wild parties, and, you know, and there are a lot of different girls, and he had relations with women in the White House. Now, that's not true. He had stopped a lot of that by the time he had become president. He even stopped drinking while he was president, stopped playing poker while he was president. I used three primary sources, one of them from a Secret Service agent who said no women came in the White House to see President Harding the entire time he was president. So when you look at the primary sources, instead of regurgitating political attacks that have no basis in fact, it changes the scene pretty considerably.
In what sense was he a conservative? And we should probably note conservative can be a tricky term. It changes over time. And applying it as we mean it today to a president from a century ago could be anachronistic. But was he conservative, or how was he conservative?
Oh, he's very conservative. He was a proponent of what we know today as America First. He ran an America First campaign coming out of World War One. That made a lot of sense and something that a lot of people wanted to hear. But just look at what he did for the economy. He's the last president, he and Calvin Coolidge, who succeeded him, are the last duo that really handled an economic depression with laissez-faire principles, meaning cutting taxes, cutting spending. They cut spending by 50% across the board. Cut tax rates had gone up to almost 77% under Wilson. On the top rate, they cut that down to 25%, cut spending from $6 billion a year to $3 billion a year. So he had a very laissez-faire, hands-off approach to that, and that's one of the reasons why we get the Roaring Twenties. I mean, business took off during the 1920s in almost another industrial revolution, and the economy was phenomenal. It averaged 7% growth a year throughout the 1920s. We had a surplus every year. We paid down a third of the national debt. Taxes were cut four times. It's a phenomenal record. And a lot of people give Coolidge credit for that. What I'm trying to do is say Harding was the one that started the process. Coolidge took the baton and continued to run with it after Harding's death.
Last question as we wrap up. What can conservatives learn from the presidency of Warren Harding? What can Americans today learn from this president?
Well, I think you can learn that, particularly in terms of the economy, our economy is a disaster right now. Our debt's out of control. I think you can learn a lot about how he dealt with the economy and how he dealt with problems. Harding was a very kind, benevolent man, and that's the kind of guy you want as president. He was not vengeful and vindictive. He was not some stuffy academic guy with a bunch of different degrees. He was just a common guy from small-town America. And most people today would probably dismiss him. Well, he's not qualified to be president, but that doesn't matter. Experience doesn't matter about things like that. This is a guy that just loved the country and tried to do what was right for the country. And he did as best he could in 881 days in office. And when you look at his accomplishments, he accomplished far more than other recent presidents, including President Kennedy. Kennedy served for a little more than 1,000 days. His accomplishments are nothing compared to Harding's accomplishments. I think the underlying message is don't judge a book by its cover. Look at the sources. Look at what people were really saying about someone and not what the politicians were saying about someone, because there's a lot we can learn from Harding in that era of history.
The author is Ryan S. Walters. The book is The Jazz Age President, Defending Warren G. Harding. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed this show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.